We're doing Megillah, we're up to Daf Ches Amud Aleph, and we're up to the middle Mishnah, the middle of the page, the last Mishnah on the page, and we are about to enter a discussion about Zav. What is Zav? Zav means the flow. Okay? So, we know that men and women can have different fluids flowing from them, right? So, let's begin with a conversation about men. Okay? Men, we know that a man can have a seminal discharge. That will only happen when he is aroused and when he is hard. And what comes out is sperm with semen, right? Okay? We know what that is. The Torah tells us there exists a concept of a zav, a flow. And this flow is not a seminal discharge. And it is not when he is aroused. And it is not necessarily when he is hard. It can come without any one of those three factors. And when a person has a flow, the flow is not urine, nor is it sperm, nor is it semen. It is something that looks similar to semen. There's a slight difference between them. But the prime difference between semen and ziva in this flow is that this flow comes when he is not necessarily hard and when he has not been aroused, and this flow is an illness. This flow is a spiritual illness. There is also a difference in the color between this flow and sperm. There is a slight difference. We'll see. Now, the Torah tells us that that is a male zav. The Torah tells us a woman could also have a flow. But guess what? It's nothing like the flow of a man, right? So we know that a woman can have her period, and when a woman menstruates, so that is a natural occurrence, right? Within her body, you have in the beginning of the month, 14 days into the month, 16 days into the month, her ovaries give off an egg, and that egg comes into the womb, and if it isn't fertilized, then the womb begins a cycle of disintegrating the layers of blood that were prepared to absorb that egg that would have turned into a baby. And then when it starts collapsing, that is when she has her period, and she sees that she has she sees blood, and she could see little pieces, and that is the coating, the lining of the womb, which was preparing to have a child. And a girl has this from the time she's 13, 14 until she gets pregnant, right? Until she has menopause, until she stops having it, right? So that's normal. And that happens approximately every 29 days, give or take a few days, right? Different women have different lengths of cycle. That's the normal cycle. What happens if she had her period and then she has 2 weeks when nothing happened, nothing doing, right? Her period's over. And then she has a flow again. Sometimes women can have a little bit of a flow. She has her period. Her period takes 5, 6, 7 days, right? The average is 6. Let's say it takes 7 days. In textbooks, the criteria are different because in the textbooks, they speak about a flow. They mean a lot of blood. In halacha, we're interested even in a little bit of blood. So her flow takes her somewhere, let's say, 6, 7 days. Fine? Those are the 7 days of nida. Those are the 7 days. Nida also means a flow. Nida also means distance. The woman during this period stays away. She is spiritually defiled. She is a nida. She has 7 days during which she has her flow. Then she stops. She's clean. 2 days later, she sees a little bit of blood. Torah says that is ziva. That is a flow. Just like men can have a flow, they have a discharge that's not semen. It's a different discharge. Well, by women, it comes in the form of blood. And that blood is different than the blood she has during her period. But we don't have a tradition on knowing how to discern. Says the Torah, if she saw a little bit of blood one day, she becomes a zava, a woman that has a flow. And she is also tamei, and she has all the prohibitions about being with her husband, just like anida, same thing. In the laws of purity, tumah and tahara, there are differences between anida and a zava. In the laws of korbanos, a zav that has a flow, or a zava that has a flow, a man or a woman, if either one of them have the flow, so there's a difference between if they have the flow one day, or 2 days, or 3 days. After 3 days, they need a sacrifice. After 2 days, they are required to have 7 days of cleanliness. 7 days where they keep a check on themselves. How does a man check that he's clean for 7 days? They used to have like a little cup. They'd put a little cup around the male organ and a cup of let's say, copper to ensure if any flow came out that it would be caught there, that they could see, because the guy doesn't necessarily know when it's coming out of him. So after he's had 2 days where he's had this flow, so now he has to check for the next 7 days that he's clean. How does he do that? Every time he urinates, he looks to see that there's no discharge coming out before the urination or after the urination. And other than that, he wears this little cup which he checks to check that he had no flow. Guys, I don't know if you will ever get such an explanation on what Zav is. I'm giving you an overview of Zav. There's a whole tractate called Zavim. Okay, you have to know. No, it's good, a tractate in the Talmud. You guys are advanced. Yeah. You have to know. So, men and women, even though their flow is totally different biologically, in the Torah, their laws of purity and laws of sacrifice are identical.
Where does that come from?
Well, today, so spiritually, the Gemara says it's a spiritual disease. Technically, today, we don't know, by men at least, what it was. And by men, we know today there's a disease called gonorrhea that has one of the things that gonorrhea causes is a similar thing to Ziva, where a person can see all kinds of discharges coming out. And gonorrhea, I mean, in ancient times, people died from gonorrhea. Gonorrhea is a STD. You guys know what that is, yeah? It can only be transmitted through intercourse. So, we don't know what the Torah was referring to medically when the Torah spoke about a zav. Today, halachically, it doesn't have so much relevance because we're all defiled. It is relevant only in one area, as far as I know, and that is with regard to going up to Har HaBayis. People go up to Har HaBayis and they say, well, we know which areas are permitted for Israelites, even Tamei Mason. That might be true, but a person who is a Zav may not go up there. And there's a discussion among the poskim. Are we concerned that maybe when the guy went to the bathroom before he went up to Har HaBayis, there was a slight discharge there? I mean, we don't know exactly what this discharge is. And we have descriptions. The Mishnayos say that if a guy was aroused within the last period, that could cause him to have this discharge. If a guy exerted himself too much, that could cause a discharge. If the guy jumped too high or ate certain foods, that could cause the discharge. So we always interview a guy before we assume he's a zav. So it doesn't seem to fit in line with gonorrhea, right? Not exactly. The descriptions don't fit exactly. So we just explained Zav, and Zava, she's a woman that has her flow out of time, not in the proper time. So if she sees one day, so then we say, okay, take a day to make sure you're clean, and then you're okay. She sees 2 days, then she's required to have 7 days of cleanliness. She sees 3 days, then now, during those 7 days of cleanliness, the best thing she could do is she takes a cloth, puts it inside of her, and that cloth absorbs anything that might come out, and she checks it. She could switch cloths during those 7 days. We don't do that today. The whole concept of Zav and Zava is not the way it worked. It was in the time of Chazal, but in their days, what she might do is stick a cloth within herself to catch any drop of blood that might come out, and then check that cloth to make sure she's been clean for 7 days. So far, so good? We have a picture of what a Zav is and what a Zava is? Yes? More or less? Okay. Sounds like less.
More than we had before.
And less than you like that. Okay.
Mysterious.
So now you understand? Now you understand? You have any questions? Yes, you can ask.
All the questions are like, what is going on with that stuff?
Okay. So the Torah says that once a person becomes a Zav or a Zava, man or a woman, once they have this flow, they are Tameh. And this Tum'ah has certain stringencies. For example, all of the fluids that come out of them are avatuma. meaning if a zav spits, that spit is an avatuma. If it lands into a vessel, that vessel becomes tameh. His spit, his urine, and her also, him or her. The fluids that come out of them are tameh, like them. They are avatuma. The Torah says that if a zav or a zava were to lie on a bed, and on that bed, this is Queen Elizabeth's bed. So you know Queen Elizabeth's bed. It's 15 mattresses, and then another 30 quilts, and then another 20 feather-filled blankets. And then on top of that, Queen Elizabeth lies. And if there happens to be a pea under one of them, she feels it, right? But the Torah says, even though there are these 15 mattresses and 30 quilts and 20 feather-filled blankets, if the Zav lies on top of all of those, all of them become Tameh, all the way down. If someone were Tameh Mit, if they were defiled from the dead, so then we say, you know, what he touches becomes Tameh, and then what that touches becomes Tameh, and then what that touches, okay, fine, Adkan. You don't go down 50 to the 50th mattress and say anything he leans down on all the way down is Tameh. A Zav and a Zava have this stringency that they are Metameh Mishkov and Moshov. Anything they lie on, droop, all the way down, becomes Tameh. They lie on, or sit on, or Merkav. They also have Tumas Merkav. What's Tumas Merkav? Merkav is when you sit on a horse or a donkey, so you have a saddle. And the saddle curves up before you and curves up behind you, right? So that curve before and behind you, you're not sitting on it, but rather that supports you when you lean back and forward, right? The curves of the saddle, where it curves up, support you when you lean. So that's called Tumas Merkav, that the Zav is also Mitameh, whatever he leans on.
Not whatever he walks on.
Well, what he walks on, then he's standing on. Then Yeah. No. What he walks on, too.
For his whole house.
Oh, yeah, wait.
You don't want him to be a roof or anything.
You want him far away from you. Now, he has another Tumah. He has another Tumah, the Zav. We said Mishkav, what he lies on, Moshav, what he sits on, Merkav, what he leans on, and catch this, Hesed, what he moves, meaning there's a seesaw. He pushes down this end of the seesaw. Your bag of bread goes up on that end of the seesaw. Tomei?
Does that imply to, like, say he hits a button?
Good question, excellent question. That deserves a much longer conversation about buttons. But Hesed, oh, come on. We have to discuss what the effects. Your button causes a switch to turn on a circuit to make that move. That's not exactly Hesed. Hesed is that there's a direct relationship. I move this down, that goes up. I blow, it moves.
So it's
extended. It's not really, I mean. But it needs more discussion because it has relevance to, writing a Sefer Torah. You have to write Lishma, writing Tefillin, right? You have to write Hashem's name Lishma. Could I push a button for the sake of writing the Sefer Torah? How does that work? The matzah has to be made Lishma. Can I push a button for the sake of matzah? So that deserves a longer discussion. Back to our Gemara, though. So we said, Azav and Azav are metame. Mishkov, what they lie on. Moshov, what they sit on. Merkov, what they lean on. Hesed, what they move.
Can help but can relieve.
Now we don't have this today.
We don't have this today. Is that
I understand you, but you have to remember that if you'd grow up with this, like the Gemara says, in David HaMelech's time, in Chizkiyo's time, the kids knew this like the back of their hand. Every kid, every child knew all of these laws. To us, this is all new.
But they were bringing this a lot. So
even this, the kids
really
know.
Difficult.
Yeah, this wasn't easy. But I don't want to go on so far tangent tonight. So if you want on Thursday night, we could discuss it. We should discuss the concept. Okay, we'll go on a slight tangent. Chazal saw that people were having a hard time keeping these laws, so Chazal invented a concept called a chover. Chover. You should know that. A guy has the status of a chover. What's a chover? So you could have a chover, someone who, he's a friend of the rabbis. They trust him when it comes to trumos and maestros. Then you have a higher level chover, someone who you could trust even in Tumah and Tahara. The rabbi said, we know most people don't know how to do this well enough, so their vessels are defiled and they don't realize it. The Talmud even discusses what happens if someone's house is broken into. So we assume anyone that breaks in is a robber. Now, is he Jewish or not Jewish? Well, if I live in the middle of a Jewish yeshuv, I assume he's Jewish. So the rabbi said, okay, so we have to assume he's Jewish, and he doesn't know the laws of purity. So now anything he touched, now we have to start looking through the house. What vessels might he have touched? Anywhere he stepped, anything he touched, we have to bring to the mikveh. And that's why the Mishnah discussed that when a woman used to go to mikveh in the time of the Gemara, she used to bring her vessels with her. She used to bring her bed with her. It was a whole affair going to mikveh. Big schlep, yeah. Not only she had to become purified, also all the vessels she used. And that's why they had their own bed for when they were tameh. They had their own, sometimes they had their own little room so that they don't get everything else in the house tameh. Okay? It gives us a new twist on polygamy, right? You need someone to take care of the kids while she's tameh. Who's going to cook the food? Right? So if you have one wife who's pure and one wife who's impure, so you could, she could deal while she's out of commission, she could deal while she's out of commission. Or else, like the Talmud says, the kids were with the wife, and the kids became tameh with her, and then they went to mikveh with her. It wasn't such a concealed affair like today.
There was a kid being tameh, under 15 or 12?
A person can become tameh from the moment he is born. Okay, so the kids used to go to mikveh with the mother. Okay, so we've gone on a huge tangent, and now we understand the concept of zav and zava. The only problem is that when we start this Gemara, will be Bezrat Hashem next week Monday. So you guys have to review, so you remember it, so we don't review all of this the beginning of Monday's class. Okay? We'll add one more point, just in case some of our listeners are worried. A woman who is a Zava, so that's something which we have today. A woman that has her flow out of time, and we know how to deal with it. I mean, she counts 7 days, and then she goes to mikvah. What about a man who has some kind of weird flow? So we know that a woman who is a Zava is biblically prohibited from living with her husband until she goes to mikvah. A Zava and a Nida, they're biblically prohibited from living with their spouses or anyone, obviously. A man who is a Zav is biblically permitted to live with his wife. He should have it checked out. There's no problem halachically with living together with his wife, but if he has some kind of flow, he should check it out. But just in case there's someone out there who's worried, I once had a chassan come over to me. He said he asked to see allowed to get married. He has some kind of flow. So after hearing all the details, it certainly sounded like Ziva. He claimed he was a virgin, and I believe him, so it wasn't gonorrhea. So after all the medical tests, the doctors weren't certain what it was, but they said he's fine, he could have kids and everything's okay with him. So after all that, he asked, okay, now can I get married? So I don't know these halachos well enough to say off the bat. I went with him to Rav Moshe Halberstam Zatzal, and it was amazing to see, on a question that you don't get every day, Rav Moshe Halberstam looked at us and said, no problem, it should be the mazalta. It was nice to see how... Like that, you know the answer. Yeah.